Ever notice that everything you ever thought would make you happy ever after didn't? Ooh, me too. It turns out Sean Cassidy was not my soulmate. Orgasms only last a few seconds and money does not buy happiness. Hi, I'm Dr. Cheryl Fraser and welcome to Sex, Love, and Elephants, the weekly podcast where we explore relationships, mind, and the meaning of life. A place where you are normal if you feel like something's missing, even though you have it all. Because guess what? Happiness is an inside job. How do I know? Well, if a Buddhist nun and a sex expert had a baby, I'm it. I'm a psychologist, sex therapist, and author. I've meditated for 12 hours a day for months at a time. I've studied Tantra in Tibet, and I've taught for people like Tony Robbins and Jack Canfield and helped thousands of couples reignite passion. My mission with a loving heart is to kick your ass off the couch and into awakening. And here's the secret. If you want to cultivate wild love that lasts, compassion and curiosity, and the superpower of being happy for no reason, first, you've got to meet your elephant. So let's go. Well, here we are, beautiful listeners. Hi, it's me, Cheryl, and I have something very, very special for you for this episode and for the next episode of Sex, Love, and Elephants. What we got is a talk I gave a couple of weeks ago. I taught a meditation retreat, a silent meditation retreat, on the theme of how can we replenish? How can we heal? How can we let go of what's hurting us? And the talk I gave on the opening night is pretty powerful, and I want to share it with you, my wonderful listeners of Sex, Love, and Elephants, because a lot of you are really interested, not just in the love and relationship advice I give, the sexuality advice I give, the training I give to couples, but also in being happier, healthier, learning to work with your mind to understand the cause of your source happiness and what you can do to be happier, more free from suffering, to live a better life, to follow your passions and to serve the community and to be a compassionate, wonderful member of the interplanetary connection. Okay, so here's what we have. Today, I'm going to have for you the first half of the talk I gave a couple of weeks ago, mid-December 2020, recording this, of course, in January 2022. Oops, dang. No, I recorded this in 2021. We're in 2022 now. All right, so here's what you're going to hear. You're going to hear some teachings on the most simple and profound thing any of us can develop if we want to be happier and healthier, if we want to recover from the inevitable pains and losses of life, and that is the practice of how to let go. So you're going to hear about the first half of the talk I gave. Then next week, in the next episode of Sex, Love, and Elephants, you will get the second half of that talk. So relax, sit back, prepare in some ways to have your mind blown, because we are really lousy at understanding what the true source of happiness is. And we're really good at messing up our heads, our hearts, and our lives by hanging on to the wrong things. Without further ado, let's get into this episode. And just remember this, let go of the hot coal. Pull the darts out of yourself. They're not doing you any good. But I'll let my teaching take you a little bit further. Here we go. For the sake of all beings, may there be wisdom, compassion, the washing away of all our illusory defilements, so the radiant mind that is always present can shine. So this evening, I thought I would talk a little bit on the themes of letting go, of purifying, and of replenishing. Neil is kindly offering this talk to some of the students who couldn't be here, so welcome to those of you watching live and or later on the recording. We're in the first very rich day of a three-day meditation retreat here in Nanaimo, British Columbia. And these beautiful beings in the room, who you cannot see, but trust me, they're extra beautiful, have been settling in to some silence, at least externally, some stillness, at least externally, and opening up to the possibility of a settling and a releasing. And I introduced this afternoon the concept of this particular retreat being captured in the word replenish. Replenish. I don't have to explain to any of us that it's been an unusual 18, 19, 20 months on the planet and in our small piece of the planet here on Vancouver Island. I don't need to explain to any of us it's been a year or two of more loss than usual. Loss of our contact, our community, our freedoms in some ways that were healthy and wise for us to observe, but even the freedom to drop by a friend's house or have family over for dinner wasn't wise. And so we didn't do it out of compassion. But a lot of restrictions, a lot of pulling in, but in a way that didn't feel voluntary. That's important. Here we are voluntarily on a weekend in December, ironically, choosing to remove ourselves from everybody, which feels welcome because we chose it. It feels welcome because we have the freedom to either do it or not do it. But a year ago, if due to pandemic restrictions, we were told you need to pull away this weekend from everybody, it would have felt like suffering because it wouldn't have been our choice. And there's a grain of something very, very important in there, which is one of the definitions of freedom is wanting to be where you are. Wanting to be where you are. When we don't want to be where we are, we're in prison. When we don't want to be where we are, we're suffering. When we don't want to be here, this sucks. When we're somewhere we don't really want to be, in a general survey of people, they would say, that's not somewhere I'd like to be. Apparently due to this wind that was howling an hour ago, a lot of ferries have been canceled this weekend. Here we are, only two weekends before the Christmas holiday, travel time, shopping time, families coming together time, apparently all sorts of sailings canceled already. Would we want to be stuck at Departure Bay or Duke Point right now, unable to go where we wanted to go? No, we wouldn't want to be there. And so we would suffer, hopefully only a little, irritation or harumph or disappointment that maybe we wouldn't be able to make a gathering on the other side of the pond that we were looking forward to. But a few of us or a few of our friends or a few of our neighbors in the cars one over might suffer a lot at the frustration of, I don't want to be here, I want to be there. I don't want to be here, I want to be on that ferry going there. Here sucks. And that's where we suffer. If we want to be anywhere else than where we are, we suffer a tiny bit or a vast amount. Do we want to be in this bed suffering with cancer? No. But if we can accept and be present with being in this bed suffering with cancer in this moment, the mind can be free and joyful, even in a situation which all of us would say is not desirable. We would not freely choose to be suffering in a bed with cancer. But if that is what is visited upon us now or in the future, it is up to how we approach the circumstance with our mind, be it the inconvenience of a canceled ferry or the vast inconvenience of an illness, a death, a loss, a breakup, a family dissolving. If we are in the mind state of not wanting to be here, may this not be so. Could this please be different? We're in trouble. We're in suffering. We're in dukkha. We're in the unsatisfactoriness of wanting something other than this. So here we are, volitionally choosing to be in prison this weekend, to be in a circumscribed place where we're asked not to talk. That's pretty weird. Where we're told when we will eat and when we won't, when we're asked to do things that our body and mind may rebel against and say, I don't want to be here. My neck hurts, my back hurts, my mind's on fire, waiting, waiting, waiting. When will she ring the darn bell? This hurts. And yet we choose. So we're actually free.
even if we're in the middle of a sit thinking, why did I choose this? I could be baking shortbreads with my grandkids right now. There's a part of us that is choosing because there's a faith or a hope or a glimmer or an intuition that in the training of the mind and heart, there is freedom. Whether you use those words or not doesn't matter. Maybe your words are, I'd like to feel a bit calmer. That's some freedom. Maybe your words are, I'd like to manage the anxiety better. There's some freedom. Maybe your words are, I'd like to understand more about the mind. Well, there's freedom in that question. Maybe you're here to replenish, even though you didn't know that was the theme. And you don't really know what that looks or feels like, but you graciously attended the sits, you graciously attended the yoga, and hopefully you're getting some replenishing already. By the way, a lot of you will start to feel worse before you feel better. You've taken your foot off the gas. And when we take our foot off the gas, often it's only then we start to experience how weary we are, how distressed the mind has been. Even if your life's going pretty well, just the regular workaday life of this and that and the things and the things. And when we come here and we go, okay, for now the phone's off, the family, the circumstances, the work is managed. The assistant's sending all the emails. They're all pre-programmed. And then sometimes the assistant says, are you sure we're done? Yeah, we're done. You sure our foot's off the gas? Yeah, yeah. Okay, I'm going to smack you upside the head now. And the fatigue can come. The sadness may arise. Joy can also arise as well. Bubbling, bubbling. But I'm mentioning that to just normalize pretty much anything that's happening is okay. Just observe it, allow it to rise and pass away. Rise and pass away. When we choose to be where we are free. When we choose to accept the circumstances we're in, even when they're unpleasant, oh, the ferry's canceled. We're free. Free from annoyance, free from distress, free from anger, free from clinging to what we wanted, which was to be on the other side. Oh, okay, so we're not going to be on the other side. For those of you not from Vancouver Island, I mean on the other side, Vancouver, the mainland from our island. Now you're up to speed. Everybody else says, I know what she's talking about. If I want to be on the other side, but I'm here, I have ultimately two choices, providing you can't really get there, is to accept that I'm here and be happy, or accept that I'm here and be miserable. Now, none of you are dumb, so we all know we'd rather be happy than miserable. Not that easy, is it? Have you ever had the experience of working with your mind in this way? Okay, the ferry's canceled, darn it, I don't control Mother Nature, I didn't control the wind. Let it go, Cheryl, let it go. It's all right. It's, you know, not what I desire, but it's all right. You know, just let it go. And the body's like, no. No one relates to that at all, clearly. The body's like, no, we're distressed now. Well, that's tricky because you've got cortisol, you've got adrenaline, you've got a body mind reacting. But what you can do is say, there, little body, it's okay. Don't build a story. Don't build a big story about how it was going to be so great over there and my grandmother's going to be so disappointed. This is so rotten. When we feed it, it gets worse. Instead, try to bring your head and your heart into, okay, this happened. It's a change. It's not the change I wished for. I choose to be here now, trying to extricate myself from a fairy lineup and make a new plan. Which wasn't what I was going to talk about, but it's what I talked about, so there you go. What I was going to talk about is a story that will be familiar to many of you, whether you're studying Buddhism or not. It's a familiar sort of story, a familiar sort of adage, but it's a story of two monks. And two monks are walking along, rambling along, going from A to B, and hopefully very content right where they are and not suffering. And it's a very rainy day, a good story for today. And there's puddles and the river's, you know, bulging and there's a lot of water. And they come to a place where there's a stream, yay big, but it's a fairly big stream and it's roaring along. And there's a noble woman dressed in beautiful silks and she's in a palanquin or one of those carried, you've got two people carrying the front and two carrying the back. And she's in there and she's covered and she stops and her helpers are laden down with packages and things. And so they're not able to help her across the stream. She's disgruntled. Someone canceled her ferry. She's disgruntled, and she's dressed in beautiful silks, and if she's to wade through here, it might not be safe, and at the very least, her silks would be destroyed, and that's an unpleasant thing. The two monks come up, the elder monk and the younger monk, and she says, "Please, good sirs, could you help me across the stream?" And the young monk says, "We are not able to do that. We are not allowed to touch women," which is one of the precepts in some of the Theravadan traditions. And the old monk shrugs and picks the woman up on his back and piggybacks her across the stream. Quite a scandalous behavior for a monk. And he puts her down and she says, "Thank you, good sir." And he says, "Thank you, madam. Enjoy your day." And he walks on. And the young monk's like, "What the heck just happened?" I'm sure that's exactly how it went, by the way. "What the heck just happened?" And they walk along, and the elder monk is walking along, being where he is, free. And the younger monk is walking along, stewing and concerned and distressed. Like, elder monk just broke the rules. Do I have to think on him? Is he going to be kicked out of Buddha school? What's going to happen? That's exactly how it went, I'm sure. And the young monk is consternated, and he's thinking, he's like, "Well, it's not to me to question. It's not to me to speak. I'll hold my counsel." But he's distressed. He's worried. He's annoyed. He's judgmental. His mind's going, cuckoo. A lot of distress, a lot of suffering, not free, not free, not free. Finally, after an hour, he almost says something. He says, "No, it's not my place. Not my place. I know my place in the pecking order. My place is to say yes and do what I'm told." And another hour of walking goes on, and he's distressed, and he's thinking, and he's worried. And finally, it just bubbles up, and he can't help it anymore. And he says, "Sir, why did you pick up that woman? You carried her across the stream. You touched her. You put her on your back. This is a violation of the precepts. This is a violation of the way we're supposed to be." And the old monk looks at the young monk and he says, "I put that woman down 3 hours ago. Why are you still carrying her?" And it's a really important teaching of hanging on to the past versus letting go. Clinging to what was. 3 hours of consternation. 3 hours of storytelling, distress, judgment. 3 hours lost, not noticing the beauty of the wild strawberries, not noticing the interest of the breaks in the clouds and when the rain stopped and the different pitter-patter of the rain, not noticing the luminous mind, not noticing the happy heart. Distress, 2-3 hours carrying something that had nothing to do with you. Even when it has something to do with you. So it's a little story about the power of letting go, of being in the moment, making a compassionate choice, rules or not, to assist someone across the stream and move on. Being in the moment of, "Oh, there's a need there. Yes, I can fulfill that need. I fulfill that need. Good day to you. Move on." Wouldn't it be incredible if we could all move through our days like that? Doing what needed to be done, making a wise, compassionate decision, and moving on. How many of us, I certainly do, sometimes hang on to the thing we should have put down 3 hours ago. We hang on to the thing that we maybe could have put down 3 years ago. We hang on to the past, which no longer exists. The woman being ferried across in a piggyback by the monk no longer exists. That moment is lost to time. It's not real anymore. The first little story I wanted to share tonight, and I'll talk a bit more about letting go and the difficulties many of us have with that. The second little story I wanted to tell, again, it will sound familiar to many people in some variation or not. These fables kind of waft and wane and get changed a little bit, but the teaching principle is there. So this is a story of a person like us who went to see a great teacher, and the great teacher is in her cave, and she's a great meditator, and she's a great, great awake being in the tradition of Buddha Dharma. And we go, and she invites us in for a cup of tea, and we start to ask questions, and we've read lots of books on Buddhism, and we've done lots of therapy, and I'm not mocking any of us, I do all these things, and we've done lots of personal growth, and we're excited, and we're curious, and we're asking questions, and we're just alive, and we're so pleased to be there. We want to learn, we want to get it, we want to practice it, we want to be free. And the kettle boils, she brews the tea, she brings it to our cup, and she pours into our cup, and we're, this is going to be some pretty yummy tea. And she pours and pours, and she keeps pouring, and the cup's getting full, and we're getting a little worried. And she keeps pouring, and she keeps pouring, and it overflows, and it overflows. And we think, maybe she's a little bit, I don't know what up there. She's pouring all this tea, and like, excuse me, it's overflowing. And she says, yes. And she stops pouring, and she says, your mind is like this cup. It is so full, there's no room for the teachings. It is so full, there's no room for the teachings. It's not said critically, it's said with great love. We can be so full of our ideas about what should be, and our ideas of how we want to feel, and our ideas of what freedom might be like, and our ideas of what the teacher should and shouldn't do, and our ideas of what we need to be happy, to be well, to heal our past, that sometimes we can't just simply drink a cup of tea. Can't just simply drink a cup of tea. So what will we do if we're too full? Well, here's an idea. Maybe we need to let go of some stuff. Make room. Let go. Make room. So what are the sorts of things we might want to think of letting go of? Well, because we're not foolish or masochists, we'd like to let go of things that hurt or things that are unpleasant. Or things that are distressing, or things that get in the way of us feeling more confident, free, loving, clear, flexible. So I'm going to put forward some ideas I'd like you to contemplate of things you might want to practice letting go of this weekend. And that doesn't mean each of us will let go of that trauma from when we were 16 and it will never arise again. That may happen. It likely won't happen. Who knows? Let's find out. But it means we can practice letting go. We can be putting into the mind and into the heart, I am practicing letting this go. I am practicing letting this go. Here's a few things you might want to practice letting go. How about an event or words that were said that hurt your feelings? Someone did or said something that led to pain. Is it possible to practice letting that go? There's a teacher, some of you I know enjoy, that I mention now and then called Ajahn Brahm. He's a British fellow who was a monk in Thailand for many years and then wound up, I don't know how, I haven't heard that story, in Australia. And he's the abbot for a center in Australia, and he's a wonderful teacher, very funny teacher, very relatable teacher. He's got some good talks online, and I'm going to borrow some of what I'm teaching tonight from one of his talks. I'm also borrowing some of it from Philip Moffat and some talks he's given on this theory. I'm borrowing some of it from the Buddha and the Dart Sutta, and I'm borrowing some of it from the dark recesses of Cheryl's mind. So good luck with all that. So Ajahn Brahm, as a way of talking about, and this is drawn from some of the traditional suttas as well of the Buddha's teachings, about, you know, letting go of hurt feelings. And he says, I may not have the quote quite right, but Ajahn Brahm says, give up on revenge. Karma's going to get the bastard anyway. Very good quote, that one. See why I like him, maybe. And when we're, you know, when we're hanging on to revenge, whether it's vicious revenge or that hurt sense of self-righteousness that, you know, I want her to feel what it's like when a friend betrays her. And what we're doing there, and I'm going to mix some of the many stories, but one of those stories that's so relatable, it's so easy for us to relate to, is the idea of when we pick up a hot coal. What happens if we were to go, when I was a kid, you didn't have propane barbecues, you had briquettes. Anybody else remember briquettes? Took like 2 hours till your dad could cook your food and you were freaking starving. Yeah, took a long time for those suckers to get barbecue ready. But imagine picking up a charcoal briquette in your hand. Holy, you'd have first, second, third degree burns in an awful quick hurry. And then what would be the sensible thing to do? We all know the sensible thing to do would be to let go. When something's hurting us, it's not sensible to hold it tighter. We know that. We know that. In fact, I burnt this hand very badly on retreat a year ago in a very foolish moment of lack of mindfulness. I picked up a kettle that someone else had put, someone else, wasn't me. Someone else had let a kettle boil dry at the Lama's house, and I picked it up to pour him some water. It was empty, so I, even though I have a science degree, poured water into a boiling kettle that had boiled dry. Guess what happens? People steam to the hand that's holding the kettle. So I burnt myself rather badly. It's all healed and fine now. But it's cause and effect. But I immediately dropped the kettle. In fact, I dropped the kettle with a bloody great racket onto the floor because it was an immediate dropping. Because when you're getting scalded to a second degree burn on your hand, you drop it real quick, right quick. It's a sensible thing to do. But what do we do with emotional hurts? What do we do if that person said or did something that has led to pain? So often, we don't want to hold on to it. Please let me make that clear. You're not being self-pitying or foolish or desperate. You're being human. It's a lot easier to let go of a burning hot kettle than it is a wound of the heart, a wound of the spirit, a betrayal, a lie, harsh words, being left, being told we're not loved anymore, being told we're stupid, pitiful, worthless, being stabbed in the back. These are very difficult for most of us to let go of. But I encourage each of us to work with the idea of letting go. And as Ajahn Brahm says, let go of revenge. Bastards are going to get their karma anyway. It's not a very good monk thing to say. He says it with such a tongue-in-cheek that I think we can get away with it. Don't hold on to the hot coal, or perhaps a more realistic bit of advice is when you find yourself holding on to the hot coal, bring awareness to that. Bring awareness to that. There's the original hurt, and then there's the hurt we're piling on by hanging on because we can't quite let it go. We're trying to let it go. We can practice letting go, and then our hand will grab that coal again. I'm going to read to you, I'm not checking my email, it's on airplane mode, but I've used this to copy and paste some of the things I wanted to read to you today and tomorrow. And one of them, I'll read an excerpt from a very commonly quoted sutta. This is taken from the Buddha's verbal teachings, 2600 years ago. And this is the Salata Sutta, or the dart. And here there's some language. An untaught worldling would be someone who doesn't yet know how to work with their mind. And what did you call it? A taught worldling? Anyway, I'll synopsis it. A well-taught noble disciple. That's the opposite of an untaught worldling. And these aren't meant to be at all disparaging. It means someone who has no idea of what we're talking about yet. They haven't yet realized they have a say in their mind. They can work with their mind. They can choose to try to let go of the hot coal. That's an untaught worldling, just a regular one of us who hasn't yet been exposed to this idea or figured it out on our own, versus a well-taught noble disciple. That's all of you and hopefully me, where we're attempting to learn. How can we relate to our mind in ways that are more skillful? An untaught worldling, O monks, experiences pleasant feelings. He or she experiences painful feelings, and he or she experiences neutral feelings. A well-taught noble disciple likewise experiences pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral feelings. Now, what is the distinction between the two? Well, when an untaught worldling is touched by a painful bodily feeling, he or she worries and grieves, laments, beats their breast, weeps, and is distraught. They thus experience two kinds of feelings, a bodily and a mental feeling. It's as if a man were pierced by a dart, and following the first piercing, he is hit by a second dart. So that person will be experiencing the feelings associated with two darts. It's similar when an untaught worldling, when touched by a painful bodily feeling, he worries and grieves, and it's repeated. It's the way of these teachings are repeated because they weren't oral teaching to be memorized. And I'm going to scroll down and down and down. And we'll contrast it to someone who has learned at least the idea that if I get a hot coal in my hand, it's wise not to hang on to it. It's wise not to tell a story. It's wise not to make it worse. In the case of a well-taught noble disciple, that's all of us, O monks, when he or she is touched by a painful feeling, they will not worry or grieve and lament. They will not beat their breast and weep, nor will they be distraught. It is one kind of feeling you experience, a bodily one, but not a mental feeling. It's as if a man were pierced by a dart, but was not hit by a second dart following the first one. So this person experiences the feelings caused by a single dart only. Take that literally for a moment. I don't have a little dart blowgun, but if I did, with your permission, I would pew, 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 and you'd all get hit by a dart, and it would hurt, like a pin going into your skin. Ow! What's the wise thing to do? Pull it out. Drop it. What's the unwise thing to do? Cheryl hit me with a dart. She hates me. Why me? She hit me first before she hit Kim. She must hate me more than she hates Kim. And. We're just horror, shock. Ow, this hurts. What if I get an infection? What if whatever? You know, I've got a skin issue. It could, you know, and the things. And some of them aren't stupid. Some of those stories are reasonable, but do they help? No, they're more darts. And let's all face it, probably none of you wise beings, but I'll use myself as a sacrificial lamb here. Sometimes we get hit by a dart and we go, just give me all the darts, you know? And then there's this, and they hate me too, and it'll never, and no one will ever love me, and I shouldn't even try, and it's all a complete disaster. I'm mocking, but I'm not mocking, right? When we are in a cascade of painful negativity, it feels like all the darts in the world are coming. It's incredibly painful. I don't want to make light of it. And this is our human existence so much of the time. Something happens. This is the nature of impermanence. Everything's going to change and go up and down. It'll be rainy. It'll be sunny. It'll be calm. It'll be turbulent. The fairies will work. The fairies will be canceled. The fairies won't be canceled, but they'll have a mechanical issue. Things change. This is the first noble truth of existence. And sometimes they change in ways we like. Sometimes they change in ways we dislike. And sometimes the change doesn't really affect us either way. Darts will come. And we want to develop the ability to recognize the dart for what it is, a painful feeling. To recognize the dart for simply what it is, a painful feeling, and do our best to drop it. Water in kettle, instant steam burn, drop it. Then you can do the tending to the hurt, which may really hurt. The dropping doesn't eradicate the hurt entirely. Sometimes it will. And this is a great thing to practice with small hurts, little disappointments, little ouches. Someone's in a bit of a crabby mood and they say something unskillful to you. It stings a tiny bit, but you know it's not really personal. You know they're super stressed and you know they didn't ultimately mean it. That can be a small sting, a small dart. They're like, oh, that landed, but I can let that go. And we can actually almost immediately dissolve the hurt. Practice with those little ones. Practice with inconveniences. Tomorrow, let's say you go for breakfast, and I don't know what they serve for breakfast here. I can't remember. I think it might be oatmeal and sometimes hard-boiled eggs or this or that. I don't know. Now I created big stories in your head. Sorry about that. I don't know. Let's find out when we get there. But you get to breakfast, and all of the foods are your least favorite. Oatmeal. Yogurt. That's a little tiny bit unpleasant, right? It's not what you'd like. For some of us, at sometimes in our life, that would be like a major disaster. And I'm again not being facetious, where we'd be struggling in the retreat. It's hard work. We're looking forward to the meal. It's a chance to nurture ourselves. It's a chance to kind of rest. It's a chance to be nurtured and fed, which is our primordial need, to be fed by the Great Mother. And we get there and it's foods we don't like. Maybe even worse, we're allergic to them. Maybe even worse, we're allergic to them, and we carefully made sure that the retreat coordinator knew that. But somehow it got lost in the shuffle and we can't eat any of the foods. Question number one, are you going to starve between then and lunch? Are you going to die? My point is made. Secondly, is that inconvenient? Yes. Is it a kind of unpleasant and disappointing? It certainly can be. Or it can just be a simple dart that you pull out and say, cool, I hear they fast on meditation retreats. I'm going to fast till lunchtime. Or you could write a little note or gently whisper near, gee, would you happen to have any toast? Yeah, we can get you some toast. But there are times in each of our lives, maybe yesterday, maybe today, I hope not tomorrow, where that would really just hit us because we were already depleted. We were already felt like things just weren't going our way. Things are so challenging. Things are so difficult. Where not having the foods you can eat at breakfast would really destabilize us. So life is like that. We're not always going to get everything we want. What did this Rolling Stones say? You can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, you just might find you get what you need. Interesting that. Dharma from Mick Jagger comes in all sorts of stealthy forms.
So I hope you enjoyed the first half of this talk on letting go so we can replenish on the prescription for how to be happy. And that brings us to this episode's Love Bite. Are you ready? Here we go. When we choose to be wherever we are free. When we choose to be wherever we are free. There you go. So let go of wanting to be somewhere else, with someone else, doing something else, and show up here and now where you are, even if it's in a long fairy lineup, and you can have happiness, contentment, love, and compassion this very second. Thank you so much for joining me this week. Next week, you'll hear the second half of this teaching, where we'll bring it on home and give you a couple of action steps. I give you a couple of exercises that I want you to practice to help you let go of what you're hanging on to, maybe from last year, so that you can clear the decks for this year right now. And yes, by the way, I did do a polar bear swim, and it was really, really cool. Thanks so much for joining me. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Sex, Love, and Elephants. But most of all, thank you for being part of this herd. If you enjoyed listening, please share this with a friend. And if you haven't already, I would love, love, love it if you would subscribe, rate, and review the show on your podcast player, because it really helps all the other elephants find us. If you have any questions or comments or maybe an idea for the show or you'd like to be a guest, reach out to me directly at drcherylfraser.com, where you can also sign up for weekly Love Bites, science-based tips for creating love and passion that last a lifetime.